I was 17. I had basic training in Biloxi Field. I joined the cadet program. So I was going to be a, you know, you could be a pilot, navigator, bombardier, someone else. Yeah. And they run you through the routine Army physical. So we get to the colorblind table. And there got to be 500 guys going back and forth. You know, you read back and the guy, he'd point to one, what's the number you see in this, about two or three, if you saw them all, why? You went on. If you're colorblind, you see an entirely different set of numbers. So I said, holy cow. I don't see those numbers. So on my time in line, there are only six numbers. So I said, I memorized them. And he pointed to the ones, you know, I gave the right number. Okay. All of a sudden, they put them in a book. I was dead in the water. I'm blue-green, colorblind, yeah. So the cadet said, sorry, you can still fly, but you got to go to the back of the bus. Yeah, I really didn't have to go to gunnery school because everything was computer controlled. And guys in my class went to they were building the whole program up, and those guys went over there, and they were assigned to all the original crews over there because they were building the planes and the crews and all the support stuff, and they went over there. A lot of those guys never made it home, because that was when we really had the heavy losses over there. And I assigned to Lincoln, Nebraska for classification center. I met my crew for the first time. Never saw them, didn't know anybody from anybody. We all said, came in and shook each other's hands, not realizing that these guys, what we do as a team is going to determine if we live or die in combat. Then we got to the target, and daytime we were probably in somewhere between 16 to 18,000. We dropped the bombs, and then you would climb up to about 26,000 feet. The Osaka, Colby, and down in an industrial area down in the Osaka area, yeah. And then the name of the game, if you did it right, you'd throttle those engines back so you could almost count the revolutions on them. If you did it right, 1,200 miles downstream, or 13 or 14, wherever it was back to your base, you would come in at the landing pattern. Everyone, the pilot, the co-pilot, the flight engineer, said, no oxygen. We need that for the engines. So we'd all go to sleep. Emotionally, you're just exhausted. And the whole damn crew would be asleep. The pilot put it on co-pilot and hope like hell. Someone was between the pilot and co-pilot, and the flight engineer was supposed to be awake. But often you would hear someone get on the intercom saying, is anybody awake? Is anybody awake? Not an answer. Probably go that way for another hour. And then finally someone will say, hey, Someone's got to be awake here. Where are we? The Japanese were kind of funny on a day mission. Here, you'd be here and maybe 4 minutes up down the line or ahead of you, there was a squadron there. And my God, the smoke was black. The sky was black with the burst from the anti-aircraft. If the shell blasts above you, thank God. If it blasts below you, and then all that blast force and all that shrapnel is coming up at you, you got problems, yeah, yeah. Fortunately, we never got any below us close by. But what comes up has to come down. And we go through those damn smoke clouds. And it's just like a hailstorm. All that shrapnel bouncing down. I was kind of protected. Yeah. I was hit first. And I only had a little plexiglass. Yeah, yeah. I only saw one fighter. And he went psst like that. I said, oh. Night missions. Yeah, that was really more scary. Now, we go up single file. 180 aircraft taking off at 30-second intervals with all the different flight characteristics, all going up to Iwo at 8,000 to 10,000 feet. If you were at the beginning of the mission, that wasn't too bad, yeah. Because the pathfinders, they're the guys that go up and light up the target. And all they drop is incendiaries, yeah. They got to get the fires going. Then when you get there at the middle of the target or beyond, the fire's still pretty well, is going pretty good. And you get this huge smoke cloud, which is like going through a thunderhead. And so we drop by radar, mass bombing by radar. And the guy in the damn radar operator, he didn't see the smoke cloud. He's in a little room all by himself. And as the cloud's big, burling, you could see when you get it. I saw at 9,000 feet, corrugated roofing flying by the aircraft. Now that's a pretty good thermal. What do? You hang on like Billy Hill. The pilot puts the autopilot on. They both cranking like this. And all their job is to keep the airplane upright. If you ever flipped over, you're a dead duck. Yeah, yeah. It's pure hell. It probably only lasts 30 seconds. But it's the longest 30 seconds in your life, yeah, yeah. Just like the infantryman, it's right in a firefight, right down there, yeah. Same difference. A lot of guys broke their backs, broke their arms, did everything, you know. Yeah. And then it was sheer boredom. I don't know if we needed to land at Iwo or not land at Iwo. But we did, for fuel. What a hellhole. I mean, you know, wrecked 29s, wrecked everything all around. You had no, the fuel truck came up and they give enough fuel so you get home. And they would they leave the tank there, and they'd say, "Okay, guys, here's the hose. Here are the pumps on the ground. You get the pumps going. You start squirting the knot." You had to get the guys on top of the wings, because we filled from the top in those days. And fill up, balance the fuel load. Give us a call when you're there. We'll pick up the tanks, and you're on your way. Yeah, we were in Saipan. We were grounded. All 29s were grounded, because they didn't want the trigger to the Japanese that there was more coming. See, we were always flying photo recons up there, weather flights. And that would be one or two planes. So really, in the old entourage, I think when they dropped the bombs, I think there were only three or four airplanes total. And that's why all the photos were taken from the, some from the plane that dropped the bomb, but a lot of them from the other planes, which are more smaller and more nimble. The problem was they wanted to make sure that once you dropped the bomb, you made a hard, right or left turn and dived right down. You wanted to get below the sound blast of the the bomb made. There was such a huge rush of air that came in to replace all that air that was being burnt around. They were afraid that if you didn't do that, you'd be sucked right into the bomb, right into the cloud. Yeah, yeah. We found out just like everyone else, yeah. O'Neill Gay, that's kind of was a political football, yeah. Boxcar here is a much better representative, yeah. The Japanese, the Imperial Army didn't want to surrender. They wanted to fight in Japan to the last person. It was only when, and I know it must have been Truman because he was president at that time, he said, "We will make your emperor, you can keep your emperor with all his rights, and he will be forgiven for anything that was done during the war." Because the war was really conducted by the Imperial Japanese military force. Those were the guys that just, they were power hungry. In the official records, it says six. But I flew. Anytime I got shot at, I called it. They didn't count those towards rotation. We go to Rota, we go to Marcus, we go down by truck. Those are all bypassed islands. And we'd fly back and forth so the bombardier could drop maybe five passes so he could hone his skills. And every now and then some Japanese would go brrr, and you'd hear this blast at you. I said, "The hell with that noise. That's the bad." So that with that, that's about 13, yeah. So, but the original says six, yeah. I joined the, at age 17 on March 6th, I think it was, because my birthday's on the 14th of March. I was discharged at Camp McCoy in Wisconsin. In 1946, in March 8th. So I was actually in the service 3 years, total of 3 years. Ended up with three kids and eight grandkids. I say this to every young person. They don't know what sacrifice is. I just came back from D-Day. You go up in Normandy and between the four beaches, right there, and that's just in a little area. You know, you can't imagine. Everyone should go and see the rows. It's a half circle like this. And you could look out as far as the eye can see. And you see these rows of graves. Of young folks, the average age of the folks that died at D-Day was 20.6 years of age. We lost a whole generation.